I have the great pleasure of announcing a special guest, DJ Jaffe, who is Executive Director of Mental Illness Policy Org. We're going to dial him in right now. DJ, can you hear me?
I hear you beautifully.
Fabulous. Well, we hear you beautifully, too. So that's a good combination. Things have been a little chaotic around the station today because of the fundraiser. And we've got people outside on the steps who are doing a 24-hour pledge drive. So they've been up all night and they're needing their coffee. So now is the time for them to take a break while we take over and bring some really important news about the issue of untreated serious mental illness. And you're going to be in Louisiana for the Louisiana Health Equity Summit coming up this Friday, an all-day summit in Baton Rouge. And there's a spotlight on mental health. And then also a fundraiser on Sunday at Handsome Willie's here in New Orleans, a fundraiser brunch from 11 to 2 p.m. But anyways...
And who do people contact if they want to go to either of those?
Well, you can find online Louisiana Health Equity Summit, and you'll be able to register. There's an Eventbrite link for that summit. And then for the fundraiser on Sunday, it's sponsored by Healing Minds NOLA. And if you go on Facebook, listeners can check out our event. And full disclosure, I am the executive, well, I'm the president of Healing Minds NOLA, hopefully one day executive director. And so there's a Facebook page, and the event is mentioned there, as well as some details about your new book. So maybe you can talk a little bit about what you're going to be talking about in Baton Rouge on Friday, and then also fill us in on, you just wrote a book, Insane Consequence, and somebody as busy as you, I can't even believe that you wrote a book, but I'm so glad that you did, because the information is crucial for people wanting to understand the broken mental health system and why there is so much incarceration, homelessness, and death, even though the federal government spends billions of dollars on mental health every year. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about, start there, like, why are we seeing so many increases in incarceration, homelessness, and death for people with untreated serious mental illness when the federal government spend billions, like $147, I think, billion dollars you mentioned in your book, on mental health every year. What's going on?
Federal government spends $147 billion, but what's happening is in the days of yore, mental health spending went to psychiatric hospitals. So therefore, by definition, served the most seriously mentally ill. Since that time, we've expanded the definition of what counts as illness, and we've basically decided to focus on those with the least severe forms of it. So numerically, basically what you have is that 100% of the population can have their mental health improved. 18% of adults, which is about 43 million people, have some sort of mental health issue that's mentioned in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. Half of those are minor. And then there's 18%, or about 4 million people, 4%, which is about 11 million people, who have a serious mental illness. And, you know, you can debate what is and isn't serious, but the extremities are fairly clear. These are people who have they have something in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, but they have a significant functional impairment that basically prevents them from functioning in society, whether they can't provide for their own welfare or they are cognitively impaired. And what's happened is the mental health industry has basically decided to focus on what I call the worried well and to abandon the seriously mentally ill. So today in America, you basically have two mental health systems. You have one that's being run by the mental health system, which is treating those well enough to volunteer. And you have a second that's being run by police, sheriffs, and criminal justice, which is treating all others. And the mental health system is very happy to offload the seriously ill to that criminal justice system. So as a result of that, what you have is about 365,000 with serious mental illness, and all my work is focused on the seriously ill, so other people use larger numbers. But 365,000 seriously mentally ill are incarcerated, 140,000 seriously mentally ill are homeless. And this is largely the result of us moving from systems that focused on the seriously ill to systems that ignored them.
Mm-hmm. And you've been critical of, now you're from New York City, you live in Harlem, right?
Right.
Yeah. And you've been critical recently of Mayor de Blasio's plan called Thrive, which was an investment of $800 million in mental health spending. And you have gotten some feedback, or I've been reading feedback in the news about people that are somewhat perplexed about your criticism. Can you explain a little bit about why you think that that $800 million will not have an impact on the population that you represent, and really not, it won't achieve the outcomes that it seeks to achieve? Why is that?
Well, the money isn't going to the seriously mentally ill. For instance, there's a very popular program called Mental Health First Aid. And what this is this teaches the public to identify the asymptomatic. And one of the things New York is doing is teaching 250,000 New Yorkers going through this mental health first aid training. Mental health first aid has been shown to make those who give the training feel better and those who receive the training feel better, but there's been no impact on those with serious mental illness. And it's obvious. There's several reasons. First of all, when somebody's walking down the street screaming they are the Messiah or the FBI put a transmitter in their head, you don't need special training to know they're seriously ill.
Right.
Secondly, moms are very sensitive to whether there's a problem with their children. The problem isn't identifying them. The problem is that once identified, they can't get treatment. Identification's never been the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor's plan, like plans everywhere, is based on myths spread by the mental health industry. For instance, the mental health industry wants us to think that the mentally ill are no more violent than others. And it is true that if you look at the 18%, the 43 million with any mental health issue, they are not more violent than others. And even if you look at the 4% of serious mental illness, they're not more violent than others. But if you look at those who are untreated seriously mentally ill, they are more violent than others, and they do tend to get arrested and become homeless and incarcerated, and we can't ignore that. Studies that show the mentally ill are not more violent are of the treated. They show treatment works. They don't show that there's not a propensity towards violence. The mayor's plan, and almost everywhere, doesn't recognize that. There's no hospitals in the plan. We need more hospitals, mm-hmm. and this is a key issue. In Louisiana, mm-hmm. you have about 13 hospitals per 100,000 population, and the minimum needed, assuming you had perfect community services, is 50 beds per $100,000. Now, on the plus side, people, Louisiana mm-hmm. does have a higher median length of stay. They're not discharging people quite as fast as other states are doing it. And as a result of that, they have slightly lower readmission rates, and that's all good.
Yeah, in New Orleans especially, and we do see the residual effects of the charity hospital system where, you know, people were able to access long-term inpatient care through our charity hospitals. And so there is a culture of treating people for longer terms, but I think that's being erased as we move forward, like our charity hospitals were. And in New Orleans after Katrina, when what's called big charity closed, it had 128 long-term inpatient psych beds as well as 50 crisis beds. And so we basically went from about 150 or 160 beds to zero overnight. And that's when in New Orleans we really started to see an increase in that population going into the criminal justice system, because there was nowhere else to put them. And nursing homes has been the other alternative for people that need long-term 24/7 care that can't get it elsewhere.
Right.
And there is a need, and there's an idea that, you know, by the mental health, the two number one mental health advocacy groups in the country, NAMI and Mental Health America, that, you know, that keep promoting this idea that, oh, well, we can't talk about that because it increases stigma and people won't seek care if they're feeling that they're being stigmatized. And so you also have written a lot about stigma, and I'm really interested in that because of my personal experience with untreated mental illness and families that call me every day. And I tend to agree with you that I don't think it's stigma that's preventing people from getting care. I think it's that there's no services and lack of insurance coverage and funding and that sort of thing. But I don't see that anybody, I don't know anybody that's saying I'm not going to get psychiatric care because I'm afraid of what my friends might think of me, you know?
Right, and those are both related to where you started with the closure of the hospital.
Yeah.
Louisiana has 8,200 seriously mentally ill prisoners, but only 1,800 in all hospitals, which means in Louisiana you're 4.6 times more likely to be incarcerated for seriously mental illness than hospitalized. Louisiana also rates low in per capita spending. It's 42 out of 50 states. In terms of stigma, somebody coined, Dr. Scale, I forget her first name right now, but Dr. coined Scale's rule. The role of stigma in inhibiting care is inversely related to need. So an executive might not want his boss to know that he or she is going to see a shrink, but someone homeless, psychotic, dining out of dumpsters is not failing to see a doctor because they are afraid what their friends will think of them. There's many, many studies that show cost, inability to access care, something called anosognosia, not being aware you're ill, far exceed the role of stigma in inhibiting care. Further, what's really discouraging to me is stigma's become the black hole of advocacy. Advocates go around teaching others that there's stigma to mental illness and somehow think they're making progress. We should be teaching there is none. It's a no-fault biological disorder rather than teaching there is. And what we should be doing is fighting discriminatory and prejudicial policies and trying to change specific policies rather than this amorphous concept of stigma.
Right. And you have been a huge advocate of assisted outpatient treatment, Kenda's Law in New York. In Louisiana, our assisted outpatient treatment law is Nicola's Law. And that essentially is an alternative to institutionalization for people with serious mental illness, where they are still mandated to take follow a treatment plan. And there's some groups that react to that, saying it takes away a person's civil liberties and do not support it. But I think in New York and other states, there have been huge successes with that program. I have a friend here in New Orleans who's on the board of NAMI, in fact. I had her on my show one time, and she is a family member that was able to get into our assisted outpatient treatment program. And he's done tremendously well. I mean, began with the same story, not wanting to take medications, in and out of hospitals, you know, being arrested. These nightmare stories that you hear every single day. He has now become a person that has a part-time job, has been able to maintain friendships, and also would not think to not take his medications now. So can you explain assisted outpatient treatment program from your perspective, why the backlash? Why isn't it being used more?
Assisted outpatient treatment basically allows a judge to order a certain very narrowly defined group of people. This is not a program for the masses, but a certain very narrowly defined group to say that if you have histories of arrests, incarcerations, hospitalizations, etc., due to not taking medications, we can order you to, or not accept treatment, we can order you to accept treatment while you continue to live in the community. So it's mandated and monitored treatment in the community. And I'm not sure about the specifics of Louisiana law, what's required and what they get, but that's overall what it does. It is much less restrictive than inpatient commitment.
Right.
And it is much less expensive or restrictive than incarceration. So the and there are groups, federally funded disability rights. Louisiana is probably one of them. They're called Protection Advocacy or PAMI programs. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they just say it's a civil rights violation. And anything they don't like, they say is a civil rights violation. The reality is it's courts that decide that. And the courts have ruled that historically, not just related to mental illness, but there are two reasons the state can restrict somebody. One, if they're danger to self, which is called the parens patriae powers. We try to help people like those with Alzheimer's and children. The other is if you're dangerous to others, and those are police powers. And because assisted outpatient treatment allows people to continue to live in the community, is used for such a narrowly targeted population, all courts have ruled that it's an appropriate use of the state's power and it doesn't violate rights. The AOT reduces homelessness, arrest, incarceration, hospitalization in the 70% range for this small population.
There huge.
Is no other, there's no other program that does it as much. The opposition by very few, and it always bothers me because I hear, well, there are some in the mental health industry who oppose it. It is true. The mental health industry doesn't want to serve the seriously ill, and those who go into Kendra's Law are seriously ill.
In Nicola's Law in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but in when they were resisting this, for instance, in San Francisco, one of the supervisors, the town supervisor, said, okay, I'm going to put it to a vote of the population. I'm going to put it on the ballot. Well, all of a sudden, this thing whisked through supervisor's approval because everyone knows that the public likes this.
Right.
Police, sheriff, district attorneys, taxpayers. There's even research that shows that those who are in assisted outpatient treatment perceive less stigma than those outside it. So I understand there are those who purport to speak for the mentally ill who are saying that this is a bad idea, but they are really just serving their own ideology and using people as a tool to accomplish that versus help the people.
TJ, we have about five or ten minutes left. I want to move to legislation. You were very instrumental. And by the way, before we go, I want you to make sure listeners know how to reach you and how they can learn more about what you do. But you were really instrumental in helping to get mental health reform legislation passed last year. But you've been at it for 30 years. Can you talk about what reforms were passed? What more work needs to be done, and where do we stand now on mental health reform with the Affordable Care Act? We don't know yet. Replacement. What's the snapshot of today?
Well, yes, the elephant in the room is what's going to happen with Medicaid. Now, it's important to understand that Medicaid. There's a provision in Medicaid that doesn't allow it to be used for long-term care for people with mental illness between 18 and 64 who need hospitals. So Medicaid has not been an important hospital program. In fact, there's federal discrimination against the mentally ill within Medicaid.
That's the IMD exclusion.
Right. Nonetheless, Medicaid provides, I think it's a $60 billion in services to the mentally ill who don't need hospitals. And in addition, because it's a match, states are kicking in roughly the same. There is a plan to block grant Medicaid to the states. Basically, the federal government will give each state a chunk of change and say, you do what you want. But in the bill is a provision which says, and you don't have to cover mental illness. You are free not to cover mental illness. Now, this, there's no glossing over that this would be disastrous. Even the mental health groups who I normally disagree with were all united that this would be a disaster. So that's one thing on the horizon. Watch how it plays out. I mean, theoretically, if they block grant the money to the states, theoretically, they will be able to use the money for hospital care if they wanted, but there's never been any evidence that states incremental funding goes to the seriously ill. Basically, when states get money or increase their mental health budgets, which is rare, the incremental funds go to sideshows and the cutbacks go to the seriously ill, like hospitals, AOT, intensive case management programs like that. Other issues on the horizon, Representative Tim Murphy was critical in passing a bill, and one of the things that the agency that sets national health policy is called the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. It's SAMHSA. It's a very small agency. It also provides $500 million in Washington terms of small for mental health services, but they have totally, unequivocally refused to make the seriously mentally ill their focus and, in fact, shun them in almost every program they run. So Representative Murphy got a bill passed, and one of the things it does is it raises the assistant secretary to it raises the administrator of SAMHSA to assistant secretary level, and encourages him or her to focus on serious mental illness. So the big question is who's President Trump's going to appoint to that position, and it is very critical position. So those are probably the two bigger national issues going on. His bill did fund assisted outpatient treatment, which was wonderful. There's been some, in my opinion, bad bills that have moved recently. Congress just recently made it easier for the mentally ill who are so disabled they admit they can't work or on SSDI and also have a representative payee, meaning they can't handle their money. Mm-hmm. Congress just made it easier for those mentally ill to get guns.
Right.
I think that's a bad idea. I understand there are Second Amendment people who think it's a good idea. I just disagree on that. And then there was a similar bill just moved through the House. Mm-hmm. Hasn't gone all the way yet, but to do the same basically for veterans. And so those are bad ideas, in my opinion.
Right.
President Trump, candidate Trump, had said he was going to make guns more difficult for the mentally ill to get, but he signed the bill. He said he was going to reform HIPAA. There's been no movement in that yet. There's been talk, and Murphy certainly tried to do it. There's studies and stuff like that.
Senator Cassidy in Louisiana as well has been very adamant about HIPAA reform and wants to pursue that. I guess if he has the capacity to do it, he will.
Yeah,
and
he's
hopefully
actually been very, very impactful, and I'm glad you made that shout out to him. He's been impactful and on the right side.
That's it, right. Well, you know, he was a former Democrat. He switched.
Yeah.
But well, DJ, it's been a pleasure to thank you so much. I know how busy you are, and I have to...
Let me just do one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Plug the book.
Oh, absolutely. Plug the book and plug your website. And no, please do that. And you've gotten some really amazing endorsements. Maybe you can let listeners know a few of the people that have endorsed your book as well. And where they can buy it. Don't forget to tell them where they can buy it. In New Orleans on Sunday, March the 26th at Handsome Willie's between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m.
I couldn't hear you. Where was that and when?
Oh, I was saying, and don't forget to tell listeners where they can buy the book, which we will have some available at our fundraiser on March the 26th at Handsome Willie's between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. and also at the Louisiana Health Equity Summit this coming Friday, which will be all day from 8 a.m. until about 5 p.m., and you'll be part of a morning plenary at that summit and also an afternoon breakout session with four other panelists. Dr. Rochelle Dunham, who people in New Orleans might know as Executive Director of Mental Health, Metropolitan Human Services District, one of the state districts that is charged with providing mental health services and programs for people with mental illness, and in particular serious mental illness. So she'll be there. Yourself, Dr. Anthony Spires, who is a psychiatrist who worked closely with Senator Cassidy on writing the mental health reform legislation that was passed. And there will be somebody there, I think, from the Department of Justice to talk about a recent report finding that too many people are being housed in nursing homes rather than appropriate care. Because of the lack of facilities and services. But now, where else can people buy the book? What's it about? Who's endorsed it? And how do they find you?
The book is called Insane Consequences, How the Mental Health Industry Fails the Mentally Ill. And it has endorsements by Pete Earlio, former Washington Post writer, who's a major mental health advocate. Mm-hmm. Dr. Fuller Torrey, author of Surviving Schizophrenia, wrote the foreword to the book. Got a beautiful endorsement from Glenn Close, who's been a mental health advocate for a long time. Charlie Rangel, my congressman. Rich Lowry, who edits National Review. A whole host of people. Eleanor Clift from... is a Washington correspondent for the Daily Beast. Tom Dart, the Cook County Sheriff, and a whole bunch of people who are sent the book ahead of time. Chief Michael Biasotti, who's been very active with the International Association of Chiefs of Police and Homeland Security. Liza Long, who wrote I Am Adam Lanza's Mother. And then a bunch of doctors.
Isn't it interesting how the most support for the types of reforms that you, that advocates like you are proposing come from the criminal justice side, sheriffs and police, rather than the mental industry side? Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, the police and sheriffs and corrections officials are running a shadow mental health system, and they are feeling the brunt of the mental health industry shunning the most seriously mentally ill. Basically, the mental health system says we can't treat you until after you become danger to self or others, and that's fairly ludicrous. Laws should not require dangerousness. They should prevent it. I mean, all you got to do is look at seatbelts. I mean, they're there to prevent dangerousness. But so it is criminal justice, and it's been, I basically don't advocate in mental health circles anymore because I find they don't want anything to do with the mentally ill. For instance, they'll talk about how the mentally ill are no more violent than others and stigma. Well, it's violence by the minority that tars the majority. So if you believe stigma is a problem, we have to eliminate this these acts of violence. No PR campaign is going to trump the bullet of a mass murderer. It's just not going to happen.
Right, right. Well, all right, and back to where can people find you online, or how do folks get in contact with you if they want to contact you?
Well, Mental Illness Policy Org is our site, mentalillnesspolicy.org. I have to say it's not mobile friendly, but it will be by April 11th, which is the launch date of the book, which is available on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and will actually be available a little ahead of time at your gathering because it's not publicly available, but we were able to do that.
Yeah, did you catch and that, also, listeners? You get your sneak preview, sneak copy before the official release if you come to the fundraiser? Yeah. Suggested donation, $10. It's affordable.
And then very active on Facebook. There's a Mental Illness Policy Org page and a National Alliance on Serious Mental Illness group that people can look us up on.
Great. Well, thanks again so much for your time, and looking forward to having you in Louisiana next week, or this week.
Yep.
This week.
Yep.
And also, I hope you're able to enjoy your time while you're here as well, visiting the bayous, et cetera. But yeah, and we're about to get started with Democracy Now, so we'll let you go. And
right, take care.
Thank you so much for everything. Okay.